This week's Sicha, Parshas Vayeda, is in Chelik Hay, in the fifth volume of Likutei Sichos. In this week's Sedra, we're told about God's visit to Avraham. And Rashi quotes the Gemara that God came to visit Avraham, Levaker es HaChela, as a visit to the sick, Biker Chelim. And then Rashi goes on to say that that day was the third day after the circumcision, after the bris, and God came to inquire to Avram's health, to see how he's feeling. So the question is, where do we know, how does the Gemara know that this visit, Vayera Elov, happened on the third day of the Milah? And in fact, why should it happen on the third day? Why not earlier? And although we could say that on the first day, God was there and helped him with the Milah, so that constituted a visit. And when the Torah says again, Vayera Elov, it means a new visit. But why can't that be, and why shouldn't it be, the second day after the circumcision? So the Rebbe explains, after showing how other commentaries' answers really are not sufficient, the Rebbe explains as follows. Maisa ovei simen labonim, that the mitzvahs that we are able to fulfill, and the way that we fulfill mitzvahs today, after the giving of Torah, is possible because of the fact that the Oveis also fulfill the mitzvahs. So it must be that since the mitzvahs that we do today have to permeate the physical object with which we do the mitzvah, so that it becomes an object of holiness, an object of godliness, so it must be that there was at least one mitzvah that the Oveis performed that had this quality where the mitzvah permeated and had a permanent effect on the physical, in the physical world. And that mitzvah is the mitzvah of circumcision, where the holiness of the mitzvah remained permanent in the physical. Now, in the performance of mitzvahs, as we do it after Matan Torah, it is important and necessary to see to it that the mitzvah is performed in teva, according to nature, and not in a miraculous way. Since the mitzvah is meant to purify the world and not only to nullify the world, in order to purify, the mitzvah has to permeate into the conditions and the properties that govern the physical object or the physical world, and not by overruling the nature of the world. And not only in the act of the mitzvah itself, but even in the preparation to the mitzvah, the preparation also should be done according to nature and by the nature of the world. Like the famous story of the Alter Rebbe, who wanted the boatman to stop the boat even after the boat had already stopped miraculously, that Alter Rebbe had stopped the boat, but he wanted the boatman to agree to stop the boat, and that was only a preparation to doing the mitzvah. And even that preparation, the Alter Rebbe wanted that to come about in a natural way, that the boatman should agree and allow for the boat to stop. And the same is true also on the other end, in the result of the mitzvah, in the consequences of the mitzvah, that the consequences of the mitzvah should also happen naturally and not miraculously. And so we understand from this that wherever there is a difficulty inherent in the performance of a mitzvah because of the nature of the world, we don't do anything to remove that difficulty. Which is one of the reasons we don't use an anesthetic by a child when we give the bris, because the bris has to be performed in a natural condition without tampering or altering the nature of the mitzvah. And so the difficulty that is inherent in the performance of a mitzvah, we allow that difficulty to remain in order that we do the mitzvah in its natural condition. Whereas if you take away the difficulty, then you've tampered with the natural condition in which the mitzvah is being performed. This doesn't mean, the Rebbe says, that we have to go looking for difficulties and that we have to make mitzvahs difficult. But where there is a difficulty, according to nature, we don't go out of our way to remove that difficulty. And as the Zohar puts it, that we don't do mitzvahs through shortcuts and through the easiest fashion, which was the way that Mitzrayim behaved. In that in Mitzrayim the food was for free, without effort, but rather we do the mitzvah according to the laws of nature by effort and by striving. And that's what we're told about the Arizal, that he would never argue about the price of a mitzvah or the price of an esrog. Once he was told the price, he would never argue and try to bring the price down. Now this behavior of the Arizal is reflected in an earlier generation, in times of the Gemara, in Rabbi Gamliel. We are told that Rabbi Gamliel once paid for an esrog 1,000 zuz, to tell you how precious the mitzvah was. And the truth is that from this we learn not only that you should not try to take away the difficulty of a mitzvah, like the steep price of an esrog, but we see from this also that even if the condition is the result of some secondary external cause, it's not that an esrog essentially should cost 1,000 zuz. In fact, no esrog can cost 1,000 zuz by its own nature. It must be that there was some circumstance, unusual circumstance, that was causing the price to be that high. So you might think that since by nature the esrog doesn't cost that much, Rabbi Gamliel should have refused to pay that price, and yet he didn't. So we see from this that even though the price of the esrog was so high, not because of the nature of the esrog, but because of the nature of business, or because it was a difficult year and there were no esrogim growing, and so on. Even so, Rabbi Gamliel did not try to reduce the price, because we don't try to get around the difficulties inherent in the performance of a mitzvah. And the same thing with Avraham, that Avraham, his difficulty in his mitzvah of circumcision is not inherent in the nature of circumcision, but partly, to a great degree, it was because of his age that it was so dangerous for him to have the circumcision, and yet he didn't try to avoid it. So what we see from this, that the mitzvah of circumcision had to be performed in such a way that it reflects the mitzvahs as we do them today, after Matan Torah, in that we do them according to nature and not try to avoid the nature. Therefore, the pain and the healing that is associated with the bris all had to follow and was allowed to follow the natural pattern. And that's why God came to him on the third day, when it would be natural for the healing to take place. Now the question is, if the healing has to take place naturally and not rushed through miraculous intervention, how is it that we are told that the Malach Raphael came to heal Avraham? That sounds like a healing that is unnatural, supernatural. So the Rebbe explains that when natural things happen, they are always caused by Malachim. As it says in the Gemara, that every blade of grass has a malach that strikes it, hits it, and tells it to grow. So So all natural phenomena are caused by angels, by spiritual powers. Now, usually we don't see the angel. We see only the resulting physical phenomenon. But Avraham, because of his holiness, because of his greatness, to him all godliness was revealed, and therefore he saw not only the behavior, the phenomenon, but he saw the angel causing the behavior as well. So the fact that Malach the foal came to heal Avraham is not an extraordinary event. Every healing, every cure comes through the Malach Raphael, because he is the angel in charge of healing, appointed to oversee healing, and it's only that we don't see the angel, whereas Avraham did. So now we understand why the healing and the visit of God's visit to Avraham had to come on the third day. Because the healing by nature happens on the third day, and so not to rush it. Supernaturally, God came on the third day and the angel came on the third day. So this is how the Gemara knows that the visit came on the third day, because earlier than that it would have interfered with the nature of the healing of the circumcision. What remains to be explained is why couldn't God come to visit, not to heal, but to visit on the first 2 days. So we're told that every visit, when you visit a person who is sick, that brings the healing. Only when a human being visits, we're told that we take 1/60th of the illness from the patient. So only 1/60th of the healing takes place. But certainly when God comes to visit, the healing is complete and happens instantly. As we see that immediately after God's visit, Avraham was able to run, to get up and run towards them and run to the sheep and to prepare the food and so on. And this is not a contradiction to the fact that the Malach, the angel Raphael, came to bring the cure, because the cure begins on a much higher level, where God makes the cure, and then the Malach, the angel, brings the cure. So the cure first comes from God's visit. From God is the ultimate healer. But in what way is the healing brought into the world, and what form does it take? It comes through the Malach Raphael, who brings it down Lamata and reveals it in its fullness. And so, God didn't come to visit Avraham, which would be a healing, until the third day, so as not to interfere with the mitzvah. It's like the famous story about the chassid who would walk from his home. He would walk, make a pilgrimage to Lubavitch, and it was a very difficult, arduous trek. And as he was getting older, people started urging him to take a wagon, to go by horse. And his answer was, when I get to heaven, and they're going to weigh put the mitzvahs on the scale against the sins on the scale, I will have the mitzvah of having gone to the Rebbe, and I don't want to share that mitzvah with a horse. So he didn't take the easier way, the lighter way, because he wanted the effort involved, inherent in the mitzvah. What is the lesson that we learn from all of this? The lesson is that the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim is something that we should be mimicking God. That just as God visits the sick, we should also visit the sick. And that's why the Torah says, Vayera Elov Hashem, that God appeared to him. And it doesn't say God appeared to Avraham, because if it would say God appeared to Avraham, we would think that it was because of Avraham's greatness that he deserved a visit. And then we wouldn't have a lesson. We wouldn't be able to learn from that every person who is ill, even if he's not as great as Avraham, deserves to be visited. And so the Torah says, Vayera Elov, that you have to go and visit any person who is ill. And we need to know that it happened on the third day, to tell us how a mitzvah should be performed and how precious the mitzvah should be, so that even the pain or the expense or the difficulty involved in the mitzvah should not only be accepted, but we shouldn't go out of our way to avoid it, so that the mitzvah is performed in its most natural condition and thereby sanctify the world rather than nullify the world. There's another sikha on Vayeza. It's in Chelek Tezvov, the 15th volume of Likutei Sichos, and it's the third sikha on Vayeza, which is very informative and very interesting. The Rebbe speaks there about the Medrash that says, Vayikra Shem Shom B'Shem Hashem Kel Olam, that Avraham called there in Beersheba, where he lived, he called there in the name of God. So the Gemara says, don't call it Vayikra, don't read it Vayikra, that he called, Ela Vayakri, he caused others to call in the name of God. And that tells us that Avraham set up a food distribution, a restaurant, and everyone who would come would finish eating and try to thank him for the food, and he would tell them to thank God for the food. And thereby, he made God known to the people. Those who refused to bench, those who refused to thank God for the food, then Avraham would make them very uncomfortable by presenting them with a very large bill, until he would force them to bench. So the Rebbe asks, those people who benched after Avraham explained to them that the food didn't come from him, but it came from the creator of the world, it came from God, those people who benched, they came to recognize God. But the people who were forced to bench because he gave them a big bill and they couldn't pay it, they were only saying the words because of their discomfort, because they had no choice. How does that constitute recognizing a creator and coming closer to God, that it should be included in the statement that Avraham caused people to call in the name of God? How is that calling in the name of God? In fact, the Gemara goes on to say that when Avraham did this, God said to him, by doing this, you have become my partner in creation. Because my name was not known to my creature, to my creations. But you, hikarta isi bibriyusei, you made me known and recognized to my creatures, to my creations. So how does this constitute being recognized and being a partner in creation, being recognized by creation, and therefore Avraham being a partner in creation? So the Rebbe says that we find this idea that a person can come to recognize godliness through being forced, through being hit by weakening the Yetzer Hara, until the person says, I want to do a mitzvah. As we find it in the laws of divorce, that if a man doesn't want to give a divorce, he is whipped until he says, I want to, and then it is considered a voluntary authorization of a get. How is it voluntary? So the Rambam explains, because the essence of a Jew is that he wants to do the mitzvah, and it's only the Yetzer Hara that was getting in the way, and by removing the external resistance, you reveal the true desire of a Jew, and that is that he wants to do the mitzvah. He wants to be of the Jewish people, and he wants to do the mitzvah. But that's because a Jew has a godly soul. And what we see here is only that he says he wants to, and even though we know that he is saying it out of from duress, he is being forced to say it, we believe concerning his inner will, his pnimius harotzen, that he wants to do the mitzvah. But on the outside, what he says, I want to do, I agree to give the get, that could be the result only of being forced. But we find that there are deeper ways in which the inner will of the person is itself revealed. As we find, for example, by the Meraglim, We find that first, the Meraglim, the spies that Moshe sent into Israel, they came back and they said, we don't believe that God can capture the land from the nations and the kings who live there. We don't believe that he can do it. But then after Moshe spoke to them harsh words, he hit them with strong words that God was angry at them and called them a wicked congregation and so on. Then it says, Vayisablu ha'om ma'id. Then the people were very sad about what they had done, and then they turned around and said, we are ready to go. So we see here that their inner will was changed just by the words, just by harsh words. And their inner will came out and revealed itself in that they asked to go. They wanted to go up and engage in the war. Also, we find that there's where the Mishnah says that there is a heavenly voice that calls out every day and says, woe to the creatures who insult the Torah by not studying it. And they are called nozuf. They are rejected and excommunicated and so on. So the question is, if the purpose of this heavenly voice is to arouse people to study Torah, then the message, the content of this heavenly voice should be how great Torah is and how great the study of Torah is. Why then does it emphasize the negative, the woe to the creatures who don't study Torah? So the answer of this is that since every Jew has a godly soul that wants to fulfill mitzvahs, and what's more is that the inner truth of every Jew is that he is a treasure house of great treasures, like belief in God and love of God, which is the source and the motivation for all mitzvahs. So in essence, the person doesn't need, by virtue of his godly soul, he doesn't need to be told the greatness of Torah, the greatness of mitzvahs. So were it not for the fact that these people find themselves in a situation where the only thing that can be said of them is that they are creatures, woe to the creatures who insult the Torah, were it not that they had fallen to such a low level where their treasures and their goodness and the godliness of their soul is so buried and so hidden that it can't be revealed, and even if you talk to them about the greatness of Torah, it doesn't reach them, because of their coarseness and insensitivity, then what needs to happen is that the coarseness has to be removed, the shell, the klipa, has to be broken, and that comes through the harsh words, where the baskel, the heavenly voice, says, woe to you, and that breaks the insensitivity and the callousness of the Yetzer Hara, and the true essence of the Jew shows. There's a lower level than that as well, where even that wouldn't be enough to say, woe to you that you are insulting the Torah. For this, you have to assume a certain amount of sensitivity, that Torah is precious to them and meaningful to them. And when you say to them, you are insulting the Torah and woe to you for doing such a thing, that itself is enough to break the klipa, to break the callousness, and make them sensitive again. But then there are those who are on an even lower level, and for them this wouldn't be enough. And what you have to say to them is that you are rejected, you are excommunicated because of what you are doing. And that is like a seventh Tanya, where you have to say to the Yetzer Hara, you have to scream at the Yetzer Hara, you are wicked and disgusting and so on. And only then do they become ready to receive godliness, the klipa break, and allow them to pursue the holiness. And we find a story in the Gemara where Rabbi Elazar ben Reb Shimon was traveling on the road, and he met a person who was exceedingly ugly. And Rabbi Elazar said to him, empty one, how ugly you are. And the man responded, go and say to the craftsman, to the creator who made me, how ugly is the vessel that you have made? So the question is, what was Rabbi Elazar thinking? Certainly Rabbi Elazar also believed that God is the creator and the former and shaper of all things, so that this body that this person had, which was exceedingly ugly, was also Yitzir Kap of Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It was the handiwork of the Eibishter. So what did he think before he said it, and what did he gain by hearing the man say it? And in general, we need to understand how Rabbi Elazar could say such a harsh thing to a person. So the explanation is that with these words, Rabbi Elazar's purpose was to remove and to correct a spiritual ugliness that was reflected in the physical appearance. And what's more, the only virtue that existed in this person is that he is a creature, a creation of God, and yet this person failed to recognize that. So Rabbi Elazar wanted to accomplish at least this one little thing, that the creation of the work of God's hands should recognize its creator. And therefore, Rabbi Elazar said to him, how ugly are you? And this caused him to respond, go speak to the Uman, to the craftsman who made me. And for the first time, this man came to recognize the significance or the relevance of the fact that he was created, and that he had a creator. And not only a creator that creates creatures, but an Uman, a craftsman who fashions the vessels as he needs them. Which means that he is not only a creation of God, but a necessary creation who exists to fulfill a purpose for which God created him. And by using this harsh approach, he broke through that klipa and revealed the ability in this person to recognize his creator. And so we find also by Avraham, that when Avraham used this harsh method of putting the person into an uncomfortable situation where he is forced to say Baruch Kel Olam Shachalna Mishaloi, to recognize that we ate of God's food, Avraham first tried to explain to them philosophically and to arouse in them a feeling for godliness. And with most people that worked. With those individuals who were not affected by it, he would then, in addition to having tried to explain to them the existence of God and the greatness of God, he would then cause them this discomfort to remove their callousness, to remove their cynicism, so that they became capable of recognizing and appreciating what Avraham had tried to explain to them previously. And so by removing the resistance, he moved them to a true recognition and a true appreciation of godliness, and thereby made God recognized in his creation. And so the lesson is for all of us, Maisa Ovi Simen Labonim, that we have to make God known, not only to people who come to us, but we have to go out into the street and reach out to the people who are street people, who are passers-by. And this should be not only in words, but even if we have to feed them, and bring them food and drink, in order to get them to recognize and feel something for their creator. And at times, even if we have to put them under pressure, as for example with Avraham, there were those who were of shame and yofes, whom he was able to reach with words and explanations about the greatness of God, and then there were those of chum, with whom he had to use this other method of first breaking the klipa and then getting them to understand. And certainly now, after Matan Torah, after the flood and after Matan Torah, it is much easier to reach people, so that when we tell people to do a mitzvah, like putting on tefillin in the street, and it may seem that he's doing it only to get rid of the pressure, to get you off his back, yet through this mitzvah, he comes to recognize God, and one mitzvah leads to another, until, as the Rambam says, the world will be filled with the knowledge of God.